Hello, Peter. Welcome to the show. Thank you for being here. And how are you doing?
I'm doing great. And I'm thrilled you asked me.
I'm thrilled you said yes. And one of the reasons is, I'm not sure how much you're aware, is when I started this podcast, it's in the space for the Cardano cryptocurrency, I realized that there was a gap in the community for the type of conversations that that I believe you promote and like to have in and around their governance model and their venture capital arm and all that sort of thing. And I thought, nobody's having this conversation. I'm already aware of Peter Block's work as an author. And so I was very thrilled to have you here. I don't know how much you know of the cryptocurrency environment, other than I'm sure what's in the media, but I thought getting your perspective on retributive versus restorative communities and the different attitudes of that is an important conversation in any niche.
It's a big world. I'm trying to learn about it since it was named after me, blockchain, you know.
I never realized that you were the guy who originated blockchain, Peter Blockchain.
But I'm thrilled to, I don't know. It's an alternative belief system, alternative structure. You know, I'm interested in, why do you think this is so appealing to people? Why does this matter? Why are people drawn to the idea of self-sovereignty, for example?
I was going to ask you again, because I'm excited and I know who you are, but maybe my audience doesn't. So if I was Conan O'Brien and you were on my Conan O'Brien TV show, would you shamelessly plug yourself for a minute and let everyone know who you are?
I studied finance and engineering because I wanted to make a living.
Okay.
And then I bumped into this field called organization development. I liked it because it was so countercultural. I could make a living arguing for an alternative kind of alternative to patriarchy and high control systems and worlds that I not only knew about but embodied, you know. And so in my 20s, I discovered there was this field and I liked it, and I worked for Exxon, and I wasn't really built to work for anybody because I'm too stubborn and arrogant.
I don't know what that's like at all. But
and so when I was 26, Tony and I started a business, and for some reason, we caught a wave that had nothing to do with what we'd created. And so team building, organizational change, it's all been a long effort to try to humanize workplaces, structures, ways of being together. And halfway through, I got interested in neighborhoods and communities. So I wrote a book called Community Structure Belonging. And all my books have done well for some reason. You know, every time you turn one in, you know it's a fraudulent act. Okay. And one reviewer nailed it. They said Block has no data. He has no evidence for anything he says. And I wrote back and I said, thank you. I feel understood.
And I feel seen and understood.
And so lately, you know, the community world has become more important and the civic world more important and institutions. And so, you know, what I'm working on now is the common good. You know, I'm kind of going after the basic narrative we have of faster, bigger, more, lower cost at all expense. And saying, wait, the privatized neoliberal Milton Friedman economic world has too high a cost to pay. And Bretton Woods and Davos and all those places. And my sense is that the blockchain organizational movement is also trying to create an alternative to what we've all grown up with and inherited. What I'm trying to say with the common good, why don't we create an alternative to a consumer culture? Why don't we stop measuring people by their average annual income? And why don't we stop labeling people according to their deficiencies and what's wrong with them? And to me, this kind of alternative narrative, if that grew out of cryptocurrency and blockchain, it would be a powerful thing. We have to find a way to bring people together, especially strangers.
When listening to you discuss what brought you to where you're at, you know, we have that same retributive,
instinct,
instinct. And it's very strong with me myself. And I have to always kind of like keep checking myself. And even then it doesn't work. And it ends up being like the only party I want to vote for would have a guillotine symbol. You know what I mean? I'm from France in the 1700s or whatever that was. That's the only party I've ever trusted. And even if they take my head too, all right, man. You know what I mean? Like I really do. And then I get like, okay, I'm not really participating.
I was thinking about our conversation and this self-sovereignty world, the blockchain world, the distributed organization. We've got four people in the middle and everybody else is on, you know, connected in some way. And so what that does, and you wrote it in your notes, you know, it keeps some centralized authority from making decisions that are not in the common good or not in the common interest. And so it's a decentralizing power. And then what people will realize is what you just said, is that the real patriarch is inside each of us. And what you're asking people is to confront their own freedom for the sake of accountable people that are accountable for something larger than their own small interests. Collectively, we can do something about that. You know, individually, we're all human beings. Take any issue you want. People want to do a diagnosis of problems. What's wrong? How do I fix it? Every newspaper is investigative journalism. What's wrong and who made a mistake? It doesn't take you anywhere. It can stop things, but it doesn't create anything. You can't problem solve your way into an alternative future. It just makes things a little better. Because if you're still living in the old narrative, the old story, the top management is cause and everybody else is effect. Parent is cause, teacher is cause. If you live in that story, then what are you going to reform? You know, make top management a little kinder, make eye contact. Mm. That's what we do with executives. Make eye contact, listen a little bit, say hello, walk around. Yeah. If they still think, if we all believe that they are cause, they are essential. And when I was consulting people, don't you want to talk to top management? I said, why? They're imprisoned by our expectations. And so problem solving, deficiency mindedness is our habit. And also it's a way to make money. I come to you and can prove you got a problem and I got a solution. I'm in business.
So it sounds like you're alluding, therefore, to a solution of changing the story.
Amen. That's all. That changes. So, that's the only thing. The narrative, the story, the governing story for individuals and collectively. So
what's involved with that? I know that's a bit of a loaded question. That is the process.
It's to look at human beings and say, what are they good at?
Would you call that starting with assets? Or is that still
asset, a little basic, too? Yeah, that's one of the words it's called. With people's gifts, there's no such thing, for example, as a homeless person. Now, I don't know whether that's a big issue where you live, but it's on people's minds.
Getting a bit worse, yeah.
So what does that mean? Some friend of mine said, I'd like you to meet John. He's homeless. What am I going to do? Say, my name's Peter and I'm housed. Okay, so that narrative doesn't take us anywhere. Instead, you ask somebody, what are you good at? He says, I can sing. Well, I'd like to hear you sing. And so in the community, in the self-sovereignty world, you're saying, what are we good at? Forget about what you're working on. Because all that does is outsource your accountability to some other kind of solution. You are enough. I have enough. That's the new narrative. Mm-hmm. People are going to project their issues onto you, and especially the more popular this podcast takes off, everybody's going to have an opinion about who you are. Same with me.
Oh, sure. And
you'll learn that it means nothing. Dark side and light side. I've had people get really angry with me. And I learned it got nothing to do with who I am. So when people get really mad and disappointed in me, I just say, good point.
And this crypto space is already... I just want to take the easy route and call it toxic, but it's already like that in a lot of ways with the tribalism. They call it tribalism, right? This coin is the best coin. That coin is the best coin. Meanwhile, the world's burning and on fire, but we're all fighting over which coin is going to make us the most money. Yeah, or, you know what I mean? To that effect.
Captures everything. It's a beautiful statement. We're fighting over the wrong thing. It's the elite and the well-off. Is that the elite and the well-off that are arguing? And it's just, it starts in the first grade where I come from. You know, I had friends and we went to the first grade and all of a sudden I had competitors. Some got A's and some got D's. I was a B student. I needed somebody to get a D to make my B easier to get. So that's at age 7. So what you're trying to do, my guess, because you're talking to me, is create an alternative. Mm. And that community world says that we're all wounded. We're wounded at the moment of birth. And all you have to do is kind of get it. And then when you see it, it loses its power and doesn't go away. You're going to love that guillotine for the rest of your life. But it won't mean so much. And that's why we need each other. That's why there's more civility and communalism in Canada as a culture. It's just not, and you may not know it, but that's the community work, is to say, I can't show up and pretend I have no wounds, but let's talk about what you and I want to create together. What are you good at? What am I good at? What's the future we want to create? And get off the deficiency stuff. It never goes away.
So can we talk for a minute about the restorative perspective is what I call it, and how, I guess, and how you try to promote that in your work and communicate that to people in a way that maybe they will also perpetuate it.
It's beautiful. You know, restorative justice is the most concrete expression I've seen of that. And that says you take, when there's somebody did something wrong, first step is to admit it, acknowledge I did it. Second step is to say I won't do it again. Third step is to say I'm sorry. And fourth step is what can we do to provide some restoration of the harm that I participated in. And so restorative practice, restorative culture, restorative justice is an organized form of forgiveness so we can move on. And that's, I love that language.
So you're talking about dissolving resentments.
Working largely. It out. But another part of it is to say, what's the forgiveness you're unwilling to offer? Now that's life-changing. If I ever decided I could forgive whoever, then I'm owning my life. That's what I mean. A lot of the community work is helping people say, well, we can create. We don't have to wait for the mayor's transformation. I'm not waiting for the police to be transformed. Race is not going to disappear because of training on unconscious bias. Those are different.
Probably just make it worse.
Yeah. What will make a difference is what you're playing in. You're playing in the economic domain. In an organizational domain that says, let's distribute our economics and let people have control over their financial life. That's the sentence I'm betting my life on right now, is what can we do in these neighborhoods, in the city that I live in, country I live in, world that I live in, that gives people a little more control over their own financial well-being. Suppose we created a different narrative than the typical economic, social service, philanthropy, charity. Go anywhere you want. Schools, none of them are reducing wealth inequality. And so this is curriculum and say, well, why don't we create an alternative economic narrative? It's not based on scarcity, growth, scale, efficiency. Why don't we create a cooperative economy? Why don't we create a collaborative economy? Why don't we make economics a small part of our conversation? Why don't we stop calling people according to their income? Or whether they're single or married? What about journalism? Mm-hmm. There's people creating alternative journalism. This is what the book's about. Journalism, architecture, faith, and economics. And saying, why don't we say, well, if we care, commit it to the common good instead of the private interest, private sector.
What's interesting is there's, unfortunately, doesn't seem to be a cohesive way to get a vision around that, where everyone sort of agrees to put their efforts. And so you have myself here, and I think this is important. And then you're Peter Block, and you're over there, but you think that the other thing's important. And what's really important is security, and this person thinks it's privacy, and this person thinks that it's commercial adoption, and this person thinks that it's efficiency.
See, that conversation is based on a variety of opinions, and they mean nothing. It's just nice. It's fun. But what I'm, the purpose of my book is just what you described. I say there's something larger here that brings us all together. And we're calling it the common good, but I'm saying it calls for a certain kind of leadership also. And that's what you're doing. See, I would say what you're up to is pulling those little hints of the future together, an alternative future. That's the common good, and I like it because it hasn't been politicized yet. There's just a lot of people caring about that nobody knows it. So what you're doing with your podcast is a convening function, and that's amazing.
And I thought I just saw a gap in the market of people.
We all had the wrong reason for everything we started.
That's true. My first introduction to your work was with a different book, The Answer to How is Why. Yes is Yes. And a very challenging book to first read. But can you describe a little bit your philosophy behind The Answer to How is Yes, maybe starting with the error of starting with how too quickly?
How is always arguing against an alternative future, anything really happening. And I, from years of consulting and whatever, you say, well, why don't we create a more engaged employee population? Why don't we get people on the margin? And they say, where is it working? I know right then that this idea is not going well. And then they say, and how would you do that? And what the book was about was to say, why don't we talk about purpose? What's the point? What do you care about? What kind of world do you want to inhabit? What kind of organization do you want to lead or be part of? And then we'll find out about methodology. And if you can't import tomorrow from another place. So all those questions of practicality. You can't engineer the future. You're making this up as you're going along. That means you're alive. It doesn't mean you're naive or unprepared. And the blockchain culture, the Cardano culture, whatever, and I want to live in that world. Even at my age, my future's gone. It's behind me. My bucket's empty. You're experiencing the anxiety of choosing freedom over safety. And what's hard for people in power is that people want them to provide safety. And it's always a lie. It's always a lie. I know what's good for you. I'm your best interest. And that's a lie. That's every ad. Makes me immortal. Makes me healthy. Makes me attractive. And so I love what you're doing. That's why I said yes. I could see it in your words. It's not that you read the damn books. I think you're trying to create an alternative kind of world, and your community is too. And of course, they'll find the devil inside of them. But so what? It's not it. Nobody's interested. Stop working on yourself. Too much of our transformational conversation is inside out. Be the change you want to be in the world. See in the world it's gone. No, it's out. I need you. I need this conversation. I need your podcast. We need. And then the way you come together makes a difference.
Yeah. And you said the key word too, which I had forgotten about, aliveness, which are like, if you come from any background and me still holding on to my story, my early years were challenging, and now I'm in a place where it's not as challenging, but my mentality is still from that challenging space. And now I've been confronted with the new reality of the future that I want to build for myself. And it involves a little bit more thinking of others. And when I say a little bit more, probably way the hell more thinking about the well-being of others in a way that is completely thinking about them before my needs and that sort of thing, putting them before myself and in a way that's doesn't impede on my, I don't know, safety or security or whatever. And I'm calling those the skills of belonging, right? Which is skills I didn't need at first. Skills I needed at first was survivorship. Skills I needed at first were the ones of self-interest, the same type of patriarch, which, you know, when I get into the, so I can listen to the media and I can listen to the patriarchal things or whatever I want and be like, yes, I'm going to align myself with that. And I'm going to put my nose to the grindstone and work like a lunatic and think like a lunatic and get it done. And then I got it done to some degree. And I realized.
Well, I think that's the first phase of life, is to say, can I make it? Because you grow up thinking you faked it. I learned how to get decent grades by making eye contact and smiling. In my last name.
Telling them what they wanted to hear.
I don't remember anything I learned in school. I learned a lot, but at some point you've answered number one questions, can I make it? And some people slow to launch, some people in their 20s, they'll haven't answered that question. Now you know. I discovered in my late 20s, for worse or for worse, you're gonna make it. You learned how to do something you cared about. And now, then after that, you say, so what's the point? And what strikes me about what you just went through from the left side to the right side of you, and you're walking into this unknown, but you said yes. Who knows what mess you're in now? Don't glamorize it. Life is messy. You know, anybody claims victory is not paying attention. It's the casualty of colonialism is aliveness. The casualty of the business perspective of scale and speed and cost. You lose your, it commodifies us. You are, and probably your community, are trying to create an alternative to being commodified. That's a big deal. You're choosing. And that's what belonging means, is how do I create a context? And it's, nobody's ignoring your needs. It's just you realize your needs include other people. They're citizens. They're people that are economically isolated, is the language we're using. And so you're trying to help them overcome their economic isolation and your bank card and your cash, go cash and all that kind of stuff. The Philippines, 100 million people, you know, 60 million don't have bank accounts or anything like that, or even ID cards. So I think that's, I love that way of thinking. You know, when Adam Smith wrote about the linen mills of Glasgow, he didn't mention that they were getting cotton for nothing because of slave labor in the United States. And so I think it's, what you're saying is everybody has skills and capacities. How do we help them monetize it? How do we help them participate in a marketplace instead of exploiting them with low-cost labor?
What would you say? I'm trying to think of an arc to wind this conversation towards the not that we're ending already, but I don't want to say, okay, so what's the solution, sir?
And then then. Well, you mentioned it. You're drawn to the idea of belonging and not a tribal belonging, not about a belonging that's organized around competition or this is me. It's a belonging is a place that welcomes the stranger. And if your community, Cardino community, wants to stay alive, it will welcome strangers. Instead of saying, now there's a marketplace and you want to invest well, but you don't have to win over others. And so I think without a sense of belonging, without a sense of connection, without people knowing who we are, then we're just going to lapse back into a better than yours, a competitive. We're here to be with each other and find out what you're good at and say, where does that take us? And I don't care what your economic condition is. You're good at something. And so that's, I think, your cryptocurrency is in the process of creating an alternative cultural organizational language also. And the word crypto probably came because nobody wanted to name it. Nobody knows where the damn servers are. There's nobody to blame, damn it.
Yeah, it's supposed to be as elusive as possible in that sense.
But I think you're going to create a language and a way of speaking about belonging and generosity instead of philanthropy, well-being instead of average annual income. That opens up a world for everybody.
Well, you know what? Another phase that kind of goes along with my belonging, my thoughts about belonging, is that communities are where healing happens. We all try to accomplish healing on our own, maybe even on all different kinds of levels. Going to the gym and working out on the thing by myself, or maybe with one other, you know, someone to make sure I don't crush my neck on a bench press, right? And then, but even then, that's twice as good because now you can work harder and you're safe because you got one other dude that's going to make sure you don't crush your windpipe when you're doing suicide pushes on a bench press. We go to paid professionals for like $200 an hour, you know, to talk about like how critical your parents were or whatever, or how tough high school was, or we do, but like the addicts of the world, the alcoholics and them people, I mean, some of them, I guess, probably do all that stuff. And there is professionals in that space, but like they meet in a church basement and stay sober. And these are Barney Gumbles. Oh. These are Simpson characters of alcoholism. Like they're
We don't know how to deal with that. Except in Vancouver, they do harm reduction and they have safe injection sites. And so why don't we use compassion to deal with people who can't, whose lives are out of control? And you're right. What you're talking about is whatever's wrong with me, I think I can outsource the solution. Hire a therapist, hire a school to raise my children. Stop the outsourcing. A community has functions. A neighborhood has functions. We got a job to do, is to raise a child, to keep the place safe, to provide some livelihood for people, you know, to give them a shot. That's what the culture you're a part of wants to understand, is it's our effort and commitment to create something that counts. Sometimes we will, sometimes we won't. So what? And until you come to terms with that, you'll never try anything risky. Who cares about outcomes? That's what I mean by the answer to how. Is the yes, is to commit yourself, and then you figure out what you're doing. And if it doesn't work, so what? I've been involved, I think about 25 different projects I've tried to start over 20 years in Cincinnati. Three have worked, 21. And I blamed myself for each of those 21. I thought, Peter, if you were more committed, more orderly, more structured, showed up in a different way, if you could judge people, blah, blah. I have a whole story. How boring is that? Real estate is the largest industry in the United States. And I call it the real estate cartel because they run it. So, of course, it's built into the law. Of course, it's designed for the colleges designed to sort and select. Colleges in the U.S. are proud of their rejections. You know, Yale says, we only allowed 3.1% in our place. Oh, Harvard's with 3.3. Yes, it's insane.
We're number one.
Anyway, I think probably the cultural appeal of the cryptocurrency world is to experience a different narrative and a different life and a different way of being together.
But what I'm seeing over and over again is this conflict of priorities. And again, 10 million people, 10 million different ideas of what's important. And my strategy has been to suggest that we have a common set of values that we would elaborate on.
You already do. You just need to name them. Things that matter. There's no argument. Oh, I believe in love. Bullshit. I believe in compassion. No, I believe in generosity. Hey, I'm a forgiveness guy. How about equity? How about social justice? How about economic equity? There's nothing to argue about.
It's what you said earlier was opinions, I believe.
Well, these are values. Opinions are ridiculous. We have them, but maybe you break up into bubbles or segments of people who really care about the planet, people who really care about children, the next generation, people who really care about economic equity, who really care about ending suffering and migration, and any one of those will take you anywhere you want to go.
So let's do that then. Yeah. That might be a poetic ending for this one. I guess, what is it to you that really matters? Why? What made it important for you to be here? And then obviously you can ask me something as well or whatever. And we can keep going as long as you want.
No,
I have the day off. I took the day off from work.
I was drawn by your language, that I felt that you, I don't know, I'm just drawn by a chance to participate in where people are trying to create an alternative world. That's the room I want to be in every single time. I'm not interested in, I do have a social life, and there are people I have gotten connected. One of my old stories was Peter the Gypsy, wandering Jew. And then I moved to Cincinnati and I've blown that thing up. But I just, the way you speak and your language, which I thought was stunning. It's a world, you're a world I don't understand. And so any hints or guesses or whispers, what was important for you to be in this conversation?
Well, this conversation with you specifically was more about, this is kind of, in this space of this type of conversation, if there was a Mount Rushmore, by default, you're one of the four or something. And I don't know all the actors in the space. I might, want to ask this guy or that guy to come on the show. I've been in a little bit of contact with Mark, but unfortunately that broke down a little bit. But or maybe there's a guy from the ABCD Foundation, John McKnight.
Awesome.
These type of people I'm chasing down. Or you?
There's a guy in Ireland called Cormac Russell who's worked with us and John.
I kind of had in the back of my mind about starting a podcast, just based on, my own selfish reasons of trying. I have other side businesses that are going on and stuff like that, but I couldn't get it to go, and it didn't have any, it just felt so forced and it was terrible and I just hated it. And then getting into Cardano, and I saw the community emerging, and I saw even though it's a patchwork quilt that doesn't even look like anything, it's not even a square, but a patchwork fabric of opinions that's kind of all influenced from one of the founders, and he has the same as a lot of the type of speaking of what we're talking about, so that's why the culture kind of feels like that a little bit. But he's also trying to remove himself from the picture. He doesn't want to be Elon or something, you know what I mean? He's trying to, this is supposed to be its own self-perpetuating thing, but anyways. And I saw in the space that, like, look, these people are, they're already asking how. And that's all, that's as far as I was with your material. They're already asking how. And I kind of already was like, well, who cares? My answer to how is who cares? It's not, yes, it's who cares. Like, it's, you're not there yet. And so I was like, I can talk for days about with people about, something other than the price on the markets, which just crashed the other day, something other than which coin is best, something other than, I can talk with a guy who is within just only starting my podcast a little while ago, who is the perpetuator of the message, one of the guys that perpetuates the message. I can have these meaningful conversations, and you know what? It's kind of easy. I like to put stupid jokes in there, and they probably make people fast forward and they think I'm an idiot.
Every conversation like this needs editing. But, one of the things that strikes me about you, Dallas, is you believe in ideas. And I love that, because some people only believe in doing, only believe in and I think your community is organized around a set of ideas long before it even became a quilt. And for the guy who started it, I would say to him, I don't want you to leave. I just want someone else to convene us and keep us focused on what matters. and maybe it's a small group of us. But don't.
That's an interesting perspective.
Because convening is where the power for community resides. And convening includes what's worth talking about. And you and three others will know that. And tell them, you just don't leave what you've created. You just don't know how to, you don't have to carry it any longer.
Most people end with a plug. You may or may not want to do that, but what about inviting people to continue the conversation with you or interacting with you in some way? How would you like to do that?
You know, there's two organizations I'm connected to. One is called Designed Learning.
Designed Learning. I'm going to write this stuff down.
.com, which runs all kinds of things around these ideas. And the other is called the Common Good Collective. And those are places that I've been intimately involved in. And, you know, people need to be part of a cohort, part of a community. You can organize it. And we're connected now. There's nothing we can do about that. We're friends now.